Yeah, it really took me hitting that bottom and waking up in the ambulance and being like, I do not want to die. And that is what it took for me to finally take it seriously.
Welcome to the Juggling the Chaos of Recovery podcast, where we focus on health, wellness, and overcoming all types of addictions. You're in the right place if you're a mom, dad, friend, sibling, or caregiver who has a loved one who is or was struggling with an eating disorder or any other kind of addiction. In a time when everything seems heavy, I'm here to bring you a real yet lighthearted take on what the heck we are all supposed to do with our lives while we care for our loved ones who are struggling. One thing holds true throughout it all. You can't juggle the chaos without smiling, at least a little bit. Welcome to another episode of the Juggling the Chaos of Recovery podcast. I'm your host, Moira Gorski. So glad that you are here. So glad you're coming back to listen to the podcast. I hope that you're sharing it with those that you know and love who could also find value in this, and hoping that you're finding hope and health in this struggle of sometimes the struggle of life and recovery and watching those around you struggle and again, just working on showing up well for yourself and others in your life. Today, I bring another guest to you. Her name is Bridget Kingston. Now, I don't know her much, but I'm real curious to have a chat with her today. I do know her mother, and I've met her. I met her mother through a local yoga studio that recently opened up in my area, and I knew one of the instructors who invited me to come and check it out. And I've really come to love Julie's practice of yoga and really connected with her more strongly as I participated in a New Year's Day meditation. And it was lovely, and it brought up a lot of things for me at that point. My daughter was really struggling at that point with her recovery, and it was really impacting me and my heart. And Julie and I connected about that after the class or in the meditation, and she shared with me that she'd been through a similar journey with her daughter. So Julie will be coming on to be to have a little chat with me real soon. But today I'm bringing Bridget on to share her story. So thanks, Bridget, for joining me today.
Of course. Yeah. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. So we like to start off with your story and just sharing, kind of your story of how kind of your struggle began, what that journey looked like as you faced getting help or not wanting help or, just kind of what brought you to where you're at today.
Yeah. So I think dance played a very big role in just kind of a lot of the mindsets that lead to an eating disorder. But I don't think that I can, place all of the cause on that, because I do remember being a very small child and having those thoughts of like feeling that I'm taking up too much space or, just being highly, highly critical of my outward appearance, like as a very small kid. But then again, dancing for the majority of my life, very rigorous classical ballet training. I mean, it certainly didn't help those pre-existing mindsets. It's very much your value is very, heavily placed on your appearance, and you are pitted against your peers, and it's just highly competitive and can be very toxic in a lot of ways. And it's very sad because I do love dancing, and I still love dancing, and I wish that, you could have one without the other, but it really doesn't seem to work that way. And I know a lot of the girls that I used to dance with have very, very similar stories to me. So it's just a thing. And I know gymnastics, ice skating, it's all of those. So that was probably a big part of what started my disordered eating. And it kind of started out where it wasn't really, problematic, whatever that means, or noticeable. It didn't really spiral out of control until my junior year of high school. I got injured and I had to stop dancing completely. And I think that, you know, those lingering, you know, eating disorder thoughts in the back of my head, those were the only thing left that I had. My entire identity was a dancer, you know. I was barely in high school because I was commuting to the city for dance. Like, I had no plans of going to college. I just wanted to be a professional dancer, and I could have done it. Like, it wasn't, you know, an unreasonable thought. So when I got injured and I had to stop, it was literally like I had nothing. I felt like I wasn't even a person anymore. And the eating disorder was the one thing that I could control. It was the one thing that I could do. And of course, I wasn't thinking logically like that at that time. You know, it was really just like the perfect storm to kind of, you know, plummet me down there. So, yeah, it was that summer going into my sophomore year was when things got really, really bad. And I think that was probably when my mom found out, or I think I told her. Actually, I did tell her. And then I think I was put in my first treatment. I think that was probably that summer. I'm sorry, my timeline is all messed up. No, it was the winter. It was my junior year of high school. It was in the winter, like Christmas break. I just did not go back to school after Thanksgiving break because, again, it wasn't just an eating disorder. It was anxiety. It was depression. It was all of the above. And my biggest trigger for a lot of the things was school. So I stopped going to school and my mom was like, you're either going to school or you're going in a treatment place. Like, you're not staying at home. You're not staying in bed. So I had been seeing, I think he's technically a psychotherapist. I'm not entirely sure. His name is Dr. Kowal. He practices in Naperville. Very different holistic approach to all types of, you know, disorders. But I know he specifically works with eating disorders a lot. So I had been seeing him, you know, however many times a week. And him and his, you know, partner, his work partner, run what's called the RUA Center, also in Naperville. It's basically just like a holistic, not retreat center, but they have meditation, they have yoga, they have, you know, Reiki, all of the above. And I think it was like a day of decision. Like, we were having a family therapy session and my mom was just like, I don't know what to do. She's not getting better at home. I can't do anything. She's not going to school. And it was literally just like the end of the road. Like, what the heck do we do? Mm-hmm. So that's when we decided that I would stay there for a little bit at the RUA Center. And it was a very non-traditional approach. Like, it wasn't affiliated with the hospital. Obviously, he was a doctor. But I think I remember my dad not being totally on board. Like, he wanted to do kind of the more, you know, Linden Oaks hospital route. Mm-hmm. But I'm very grateful for my mom for trusting her gut and trusting, you know, what she felt I needed, which was a more, you know, I keep saying the word holistic, but it's true, natural approach to it. And so I stayed there probably for about on and off like a month and a half, and I would, you know, come home for weekends, and it definitely opened up my eyes to so many things, to meditation, to you know, we did this therapy technique called EMDR, and it was just literally a very intense month of just like therapy and deep diving. And it was awful, but it was also, I mean, I needed it. Mm-hmm. And I still use some of those, you know, techniques that I learned back then. And that was really the first taste of like, oh wow, like, I want a life outside of this and I know that I can do it. But again, it's not that easy. It's never that easy. Right. So,
Well, you know, what's interesting is, again, as I said in the beginning, I didn't really know your story. And, mm-hmm. You know, for those that are listening, if you haven't listened to one of my first interviews with Sam Kolasek. She's a gal, a friend of mine, and somebody that's on my team, my wellness team. She has a similar story with dance. Again, mm-hmm. something she loved and worked so hard to go to a competitive dance, you know, school, higher education, college, you know, for her mm-hmm. college. And that's really, I mean, when you speak about, again, that there's so much worth put on the way that you look. I mean, it's just crazy. And again, you have to listen to the episode, but just the fact that, you know, on their application, if you will, there was a number that you needed to weigh by the time you started out school there. And she, you know, she said similar to you, she was slim all her life. And so mm-hmm. she knew that there wouldn't be a problem with that. But boy, once she got there, it just, again, it's a heartbreaking story to listen to, but again, one of beautiful hope and recovery and finding purpose in her life. So, I remember our conversation now with your mother that she did start to talk about, again, the holistic approach and the different, mm-hmm. different treatment modalities that you've been, that she found that you've been exposed to. And I love that, as you know, my background's in nursing and, mm-hmm. But I've been in the wellness space for 20 years. So we've tried to do some things naturally. I've been introduced to much more of the natural things of late. And, maybe this is a discussion for another day or maybe today, but I feel mm-hmm. like part of the traditional treatment that's available for eating disorders and addictions, it just doesn't contain enough of this, and it's kind of what you need, you know?
Well, and it's actually really interesting because I feel like my recovery journey is kind of flip-flopped compared to a lot of people. Like, we started out with the natural stuff. Like, I was getting acupuncture. I was doing, you know, essential oils and yoga and meditation. At the same time, I was still on medication because I feel like when you are that far down in the hole, like, there's a time and a place for medication, and that is it. Mm-hmm. But again, so we did all of that. I was doing a lot better. I came back home, but, you know, it wasn't fully gone. It's never fully gone. So of course, you know, I spiraled again, and it was then that summer of going into my senior year of high school that it just reached a whole new level of just chaos. And my mom once again reached that point. And so I did end up going to Linden Oaks. I think I was probably there for like 2 or 3 weeks. And to what you said, and I don't want to bash like healthcare professionals or hospital programs, because I know that they do help a lot of people. I know I've talked to many people that have gone through those programs, and they're like, yeah, it was exactly what I needed. And in a sense, it is what I needed, but I came out of there so much worse than when I went in. You know, you're surrounded by people who, you know, it's almost like it's like this competitiveness to get worse. Mm-hmm. Because you see, it's so twisted when you think about it, like how sick these people are. And you're like, holy crap, like I'm not even that bad. Like, what do I need to do to get there? And it's just literally, it's the worst mindset ever. And their whole approach to food, I couldn't even, you know, get into that fully without, you know, getting really upset. And again, I truly believe that healthcare professionals in that field are doing the best that they can with the resources that they have. Mm-hmm. And, but you know, they keep saying, you know, it's not about the food. Eating disorders aren't about the food, but it is all about the food in those programs. They literally, you have a sheet, they make you, you know, check off making sure that you're eating all these things. Like, and it's just so not true. Like, pizza counted as a vegetable because it had tomato sauce. I'm sorry, that is not teaching people how to eat sustainably, how to nourish their body, how to form a healthy relationship with food. Because, you know, unlike substance abuse or, you know, other addictions, like, you can't give up food. You need food to survive. It's like telling an alcoholic to form a healthy relationship with alcohol. How do you do that? Mm-hmm. But yeah, so, I mean,
I think, you know, I mean, I, again, I, I'm right there with you, Bridget. And because my daughter has been in several, many, many programs, and there is that frustration, and the frustration that she's felt, as well as that we've heard and felt. And there's also this place that I'm sure that I know that your mother shared with me, and we've been at, that you see your daughter, your son, so struggling and so sick, and wondering if they're going to wake up in the morning. And so you're kind of like, well, what am I supposed to do? I mean, I need
to, absolutely.
You know, like you're at that at a place of like, okay, well, same thing. You know, you go in the first time that my daughter was at Linden Oaks, it was like, all of a sudden she started to talk about these other people and these other things. Like my husband said that, man, is she learning more tricks of the trade? Is it worse for her to be there? And so, and even one of my sons said recently that, you know, it seems like every time she comes home, she's got some new shit going on, you know?
Well, absolutely. Yeah.
And so, but again, we, eating disorders are so, I mean, the mortality rate, I mean, it's just, it's not good. And so, you know, as parents, we sit there going, we're so worried about our child and that they might die. And so we need to, again, figure out a place that can, you know, bring her back to life, if you will. But there's, you know, there's issues, you know, it's issues there. So anyway, so go on. So continue
on. And just off of that, like obviously I didn't have particularly favorable experiences in the hospital, but like, if I was in my mom's position, I would have done the same thing. It's like what you said, you don't know if your kid's going to wake up in the morning. At least I was safe in the hospital. You know what I mean? So and in retrospect, like kind of, sometimes you have to get worse in order to truly, you know, want to get better. And that was definitely one of those experiences for me. So yeah, that was basically my whole summer before senior year. And then I remember I started school late. So I probably came back to school maybe like 3 weeks, 4 weeks after the semester started. And again, just the fact that I had all this anxiety about school, it just, and like, I had no support group at school because all my friends were from dance. I had no community because I just wanted nothing to do with my school. So it was just awful to go back and just, that was honestly a huge part of it was just high school in general. And it didn't take long for me to just completely spiral again. It was early October. I just left school one day and I was like, screw this. I can't do this anymore. Called my parents and I did. I swallowed all the pills in our house. And it just really reached that point. And I think that, you know, all eating disorders, I think that they do stem from that just belief of, I don't want to be here anymore. And it's really hard to accept, but like, and I think my mom knew that because at that point it just kept getting so bad that she was like, what are you doing? Like, do you want to be here or not? Because it's like, you're going to do something or you're not. And like, she was just so done with, you know, this in between. And it's like, it seems harsh when you think about it now, but like, I can't imagine having a kid and knowing that they don't want to be here. So that was definitely my big wake up call. That was the scariest day of my life. And yeah, it's definitely something that kickstarted the real movement in the right direction. Because for, you know, that 2 years or however long did I want to get better? I don't know. I mean, you have a daughter with an eating disorder. You don't want to get better when you're in it. It's a safe space. It's hard to explain, but it's like this comfort space. And yeah, it really took me hitting that bottom and waking up in the ambulance and being like, holy shit, like I do not want to die. And that is what it took for me to finally take it seriously. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, and the fact is, the fact is you woke up.
And that's it. That was the moment.
I mean, you literally woke up, but it sounds like, you know, you're awake to the idea that you did want to live and you had to, you know, and you could do something about it.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I've heard it so many times. I've heard it from my daughter. Again, I mean, you're preaching to the choir here.
Yeah.
But, you know, also I've, but just this, the identity piece, like you said, you lost your identity. I've seen it with others that, you know, they get injured and they can't. I mean, I saw it with one of my sons who was injured in hockey. He just kind of had these, not chronic, but, you know, he just kept having injuries in high school. And I believe he went into a state of depression. He couldn't do the things that he loved. And, and they're, you know, you're frustrated. And again, that's your identity when you've been doing it for so long. But it can also be, I think from, again, what I've seen, it can be your friends leave your, you know, things.
It could be anything.
It could be anything. I mean, in high school, such a tough time. And
yeah,
it just got one still left in high school and he's in his own struggle with life and hates it, hates the school and what the hell and, you know, all of that stuff. So, but again, I believe, I mean, what I want people to hear too is that even throughout the struggle, you hit a bottom, you know, you woke up and you decided, okay, I do want to live. And I'd love to hear kind of what happened after, you know, that day.
Yeah. So, obviously I was immediately sent back to the hospital, spent another 2 or 3 weeks at Linden Oaks. And this is interesting because this time I actually was, so the last time I was there, I was in the eating disorder unit. And then the second time, technically it was, you know, for depression and anxiety, and they were thinking of putting me back in the eating disorder unit, but because it didn't really help me much last time, they're like, okay, let's just put her in the, you know, the adolescent unit. And so again, I just got to meet this whole other batch of people. And yeah, it's an interesting world, the inpatient treatments. But I think my mindset was different that time. And also not being in the eating disorder unit actually helped my eating disorder, believe it or not, because I was talking about things that weren't revolving around food. And I was talking to people who were, you know, dealing with a lot of the same things that I were besides the eating disorder. And I think a big core of all the issues for me was, like you said, it's like this identity piece. And I just really needed to learn to love myself for me without any label, without any, you know, outside identity. I remember coming out of the hospital and just being like relieved, like that I was no longer in there and that I could finally just kind of like take my own pace at things. Obviously, I was still going to therapy probably, I don't know, 3-4 times a week. I can't really remember specifics about reentering high school, but senior year, the rest of senior year, it wasn't as volatile as the last 2 years. Like things had definitely calmed down. I think that was some of my most like introspective, you know, time. And it was really just getting to know myself. And of course, that's not saying that I didn't still struggle with, you know, the eating issues or the depression or the anxiety. Like it was all still rampant, but like it was, you know, I was committed to handling it. And I think that's the difference. Yeah. I mean, I graduated, it was great. I don't know how I graduated. I missed so much school. And like, again, like senior year, everyone is worried about prom and ACT scores and getting into their college. And like, I didn't even think about college until I'd after graduated high school. Like it wasn't even on my mind. Mm-hmm. So I started at College of DuPage then that next fall, and I stayed at home, which I think was a good idea. I really, really wanted to go to this super small, weird art school in Washington State that you couldn't get there by a direct flight. Like, I just wanted to get as far away as I possibly could. And I remember my mom telling me, like, no, like, you are not going. You're just straight up not going. And she was definitely right. I should not have gone. So I definitely needed to be at home for, you know, those 2 years. Because it was still rocky. I mean, it's not like a, you know, you flip a switch. But yeah, I mean, I can say the last 2 years, I'm 23 now. The last 2 years have been some of the best 2 years of my life, like hands down. I don't really know how or why that happened. I'm completely indebted to my mom for, you know, her, she's not willing to just accept the status quo, especially when it comes to treatment, like, you know, just with the whole yoga and meditation thing, like she's truly, truly helped me with, you know, getting to know who I am as a real person. I'm also a certified yoga instructor. I don't actively teach, but I did go through a whole training. And I think the last, you know, 4 years or so have really been about just like, you know, building up that, the that toolbox of, you know, things that I know help me, you know, getting out in nature. I know it's so silly and like people talk about it all the time, but like, it heals you, genuinely. Mm-hmm. Like it absolutely heals you. And, you know, I think a big part of what I was missing when I was going through all of that was, you know, a life. I have friends that I love. I have healthy relationships. I have so many good things going on in my life that I didn't have before. So it's like, even if I do have those days of struggle with depression or anxiety or body image issues, it's like, it doesn't weigh as heavily because I know that I still have a life that's full of value, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's really great. I'm really happy for you and for your mom. And I mean, what do you feel like keeps you going these days? Is it that, you know, connection to yourself through yoga and nature? And I know your mom is like a mad smart gal about Ayurvedic medicine. And I mean, she's a genius. I asked her a question the other day on text and I didn't get like a couple of sentences. I got like I was like, okay.
She'll give you everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think it comes down to, because like the things that would just eat me alive when I was really sick, you know, the things about myself, they're still there. Like they didn't go away. I think it's really just accepting myself that I'm human. And this, again, this traces back to my childhood. I felt that everything about myself was wrong. Everything that I inherently was wrong. And it took years of, I don't even know what to undo that, but to get to that place of like, no, like I am whole just because I'm a human being, you know, I am not lacking. And so I think what really keeps me going is just, I don't know, just not placing so much on the things that we can't control. Mm-hmm. Such as, you know, this, our bodies, they're just vessels, you know, they're not permanent. They're not meant to stay here forever. They're not meant to stay the same. And, yeah, just, I think genuine connection. Like I have a great group of friends and people in my life that support me. I have found so many, you know, activities and things that bring me genuine, you know, joy that keep me going. Finally like decided what I wanted to do career-wise with school. Cause I mean, it took me, you know, 4 years to get my associates from College mm-hmm. of DuPage. And part of it was because I didn't know what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Dance was my whole life. I never thought of doing anything besides it. So now I'm starting at Columbia in the city in the fall, getting my degree in English. I'd love to be a writer or work for a publishing company or even teach high school English. So it's just like things like that, just really mm-hmm. getting to know who I am and letting those, you know, strengths just flourish. And mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah. How are things with you and your mom? You know, again, I'm assuming because your story is so similar that it, I mean, I know how it is again for me as a mom, it's just been, you know, I love my kids so much and I just want the mm-hmm. best for them. But when you see something that, you know, I just know I grabbed on so tight, but I went from like this mom, I have three boys and a daughter and I love having a daughter and that we mm-hmm. can go and do our daughter things, mother-daughter things, and just get away from all of this testosterone in my house. And all of a sudden I had to shift roles to like being the police and being the, you know, strong disciplinarian. And it's tough. I mean, we talked today that we're redefining our relationship, and I know it's going to continue on. So I just kind of wondered how that was.
Well, so like you said, when, you know, I mean, it was all of high school. I mean, I have two sisters, and of the three of us, I have always been the one that gets in, like, into it with my mom. I'm always the one that not gets in trouble, but like, I just have a strong personality, a strong will, and so does she. And we oftentimes clash. And especially when I was a teenager, I mean, my sisters never got in fights with her. It was always me and her. So then in the heat of, you know, my eating disorder and all these other things, I mean, it was, like you said, she had no choice but to be the police, and that's all that she could be. And I know it was absolutely out of love. And I can't imagine, you know, going through that if I had a kid. So, I mean, we have seen some screaming, just absolute awful moments. And you just know what to say to get under the other person's skin. And when you're in that state, when like I was really sick and she was at the end of her rope, I mean, you just say whatever you can say. Mm-hmm. So I definitely relate to you on that part. But I mean, now, like, so until all this, you know, quarantine madness started, it was just me and her in the house. And like before, you would have never thought to stick just me and her in the house with no mediator. But I mean, honestly, I mean, she's my favorite person in the world. She's my best friend. And not saying that we don't still disagree and we don't have our moments, but like, I am everything that I am today because of her. Absolutely.
Wow. That's mm-hmm. lovely. Beautiful. Within that, within your discovery and journey, are you a reader? Do you read anything? Is it mostly the yoga and the nature? I mean, I'm barefoot today, even though it's cold. I couldn't agree with you more about nature and just getting out.
Yeah. I did read. So when I was at the Rua Center, they had this massive library of literally not, I hate the self-help term, but like any type of book you wanted, it was there. So one book that I remember reading was Life Without Ed. I know that's a pretty popular book amongst the recovery community. Marianne Williamson, A Woman's Worth, was also really good. And I think, again, just it's so much beyond just an eating disorder. A lot of, you know, the behaviors and the beliefs stem from something deeper. And so a lot of content relating to, you know, worth, you know, self-esteem, that type of stuff actually helped more than the books that centered around specific, you know, eating disorders. Not saying that they didn't help, but it's almost just like getting to the root cause, you know, why are you doing this? Why are you not feeding yourself? There's always a deeper cause, you know?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I know that was, you know, that was certainly what I learned with my own struggle in college. Mm-hmm. I mean, I went away and had grown up in a, you know, in a pretty conservative Christian home, lovely and all that. But, you know, we kind of followed what we were supposed to do. And then going to college, I was kind of unsure about the decisions to make. And then I just, so many pressures from my friends and the guy that I was dating and, you know, academic pressures. And so it starts to stem around, well, I can control my food. And so it mm-hmm. kind of starts that way. But I know that it wasn't about that. It was about those other struggles and how I didn't really know how to, I wasn't sure how to, well, I've learned now I'm 56, I've gone through a lot of, a lot of learning the last few years is I just wasn't sure how to ask for help. I wasn't sure how to ask for support. I was raised by a woman who's very, I mean, my mother's a wonderful, strong, stoic woman. and you just don't ask for help and you don't talk about the bad stuff, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, and I didn't know what to do. But I've again learned that I can, and it's taken me a long time, but you know, I need to find my voice and I need to, and asking for help doesn't mean that we're incapable or that we're less than, or there's, you know, an episode that's coming out in a couple of weeks. It's not that we're flawed or broken. You know, it just means that we need a little help. And help can mean, you know, I learned that help isn't always, again, the treatment center, the doctor, the therapist. Help can be, and for gosh darn, during this time, I need the support. Like, I want to go watch a movie with my girlfriends, or I want to go for a walk, or let's make dinner together as a family. I mean, that's cooking and baking for me. It's therapeutic. And so I can go do that myself, or I can invite one of my kids in or my husband, and asking for support. Again, I think I had this view that when you ask for help, it's, you're just a cry for help, you know? And it's this desperate thing, as opposed to just, you know what, I just need a little extra support. And can you come and like watch a movie with me? Or can I empty my bucket? Right? Can I come and cry? Can you give me a hug? You know, there's just ways of asking for support that it's okay. And and I know within this world that it's kind of like, well, just eat. Come on, let's have a hamburger together. Well, it's not that, you know. So I just loved getting to know you in this 50 minutes, and I really appreciate you sharing. And I know that you've helped me, as I said in the pre-show, that this podcast has been really therapeutic for me. I learn from every interview I do, and I really appreciate that. And I know if I'm learning something and getting something, that others that are listening are as well. So thank you, Bridget. And again, I'm happy to know you, and I'm happy for you that you have found, you know, meaning in your life to...
Thank you so much.
You know?
It really means a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it gives me hope as I sit in the space that I'm in right now. And again, I really hope that this gives others hope who are listening to this, that even though the journey can be long and very difficult, there is hope. And there's hope for recovery. There's hope for a life that's worth living and worth loving. And we're all worth, you know, the love that we give, you know, give ourselves. So thanks for joining me today, Bridget. Again, those that are listening, thanks for coming back. Please share this. Please go to my website. I've got some freebies over there with boundary worksheets and things like that at GorskyWellness.com, or find me on Instagram with Green Gorski, over on Facebook too. But again, just continue to juggle the balls, because again, it can be a chaotic and crazy life, but it certainly is a life worth living and a life worth loving. So thanks everybody. And we'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening. Do you feel like your juggling of your chaos is just too much and you want to reclaim your life and health? I'm here to help. I offer free 30-minute consultations where I can show you simple steps to help you get back on track. If you're interested, please connect with me. You can do that simply by reaching out on Instagram and send me a DM at Green Gorski, or email me at Moira@GorskiWellness.com. Moira spelled M-O-Y-R-A. I look forward to hearing from you, and take care.